Howdy, folks. Today we're talking photography business secrets right after this. Welcome to Camera Shake, where we bring you the insider scoop on all things photography and videography, giving you a unique opportunity to stay ahead of the curve. As always, I'm your host, Kirsten Nutz, and before we get into it, I've got one thing to ask of you. I've noticed that over 65% of our viewers on YouTube and listeners on audio are not actually subscribed on this channel. You can really help us by hitting that subscribe button. It'll help us get even more amazing guests on the show, but it's just one click. It'll take you a mere second. Thank you so much. Now, without further ado, let's give it up for today's special guest, brains and voice of PhotoBizX, one of the most popular photography business podcasts from Down Under. Give it up for none other than Andrew Helmich himself. Andrew, how are things?
Hey, Kirsten, that is great. I'm waiting to hear the applause. I just can't hear it.
Not yet. I might just play that in the edit.
Mate, I'm well. And it's nice to be here. It'll be fun being on the other side of the questions for a change.
Yes, exactly. I want to talk to you about your podcast and everything. But, you know, first of all, our viewers and the listeners don't know this, but this is actually the third attempt for us to talk online because of my own stupidity, really. I am impossible when it comes to converting time zones. So apologies to that, but we finally made it happen.
It's good. It is good to finally see you in the flesh and, well, so to speak, online in the flesh and be here to do this.
Yeah, thank you so much for being patient. Like I said, we finally made it happen. So welcome to the Camera Shake podcast.
Thanks. Thank you.
Andrew, I'm going to dive right in with your PhotoBiz podcast because I know that, anecdotally, I know that some of the Camera Shake listeners are also listening to the PhotoBiz X podcast. Now, we're going to get into how you got started in photography and all the rest of it in a little bit, but I just want to go straight in with the PhotoBiz X podcast. How did you get started with the podcast? What was the initial idea for you to start a podcast?
Well, funnily enough, it's the second podcast that I've had. I did start a podcast when I was shooting full time, and it was the wedding podcast. And I guess that's where I learned how to podcast, and I really enjoy the platform. I love listening to podcasts, but the problem with the wedding podcast was there was no community because once brides or grooms got married, it was generally brides that were listening. Then they would stop listening. And I really missed and wanted that community part of the podcasting. So, I mean, look, I guess really what I wanted to create was a podcast that I wanted to listen to. There wasn't anything really like that at the time. This is going back 11 years now. And I don't know if you have something similar in the UK. And I know they do in the US and around the world, different photographic associations. So we had the AIPP, the Australian Institute of Professional Photographers. And they used to host and put on these fantastic workshops, multi-day workshops, single-day workshops. And I loved going to those. That was so fantastic. And then, you know, when podcasts came out, I thought, you know, why don't I create a podcast like going to an AIPP seminar workshop and have the same kind of guests on there and ask the questions that I want to hear the answers to? And that's how PhotoBizX was born. I was totally scared. I didn't know if anyone would listen and if anyone would subscribe. And also didn't know if other photographers would say yes to coming on and sharing their business secrets. So I asked a couple of photography friends first to come on and be interviewed. They were fantastic. They enjoyed it. And then I asked a bigger name photographer in Australia. And Ian Wilkinson, his name was, or is. And he kindly said yes. And then he sort of, after interviewing him, it gave me the courage and I lost that fear of asking the bigger name photographers, and the podcast grew from there. But funnily enough, it does turn out that the listeners tend to prefer, from what I hear, to hear from photographers that aren't so famous, aren't such huge names, because they want to be able to relate to the photographer guest that I'm interviewing, and hear from the photographers that are in the trenches doing the work. And not that don't have a million followers on Instagram, that aren't TikTok sensations, that haven't been around for for 20 years and have a huge following. They want to hear from the photographer like them that is, you know, marketing every day and selling and shooting to normal people like most of us are doing. So yeah, it's a long way to answer your question. That's how it got started, and that was 11 years ago.
So were you already an established wedding and portrait photographer at the time?
Yeah, so I was shooting full-time for over 20 years, mainly weddings. So what happened was I was shooting weddings. I was also working part-time in the beginning. Then I went full-time into wedding photography. As soon as I went full-time into photography, I started shooting more family portraits and kids and things like that. I mean, I would shoot anything at the time just to, because we had a mortgage and a family. So I would shoot anything for money. And then as the business grew and developed, it was families, it was weddings. And then it turned into a little bit of commercial work as well, because I'd been shooting for so long. A lot of my wedding and portrait clients were also in business. They needed a photographer. They would think of me when they needed a photographer. So yeah, it was full steam ahead. And that is why, it's a great question, because that's why I had to have a membership part of the podcast when I started it. Because my wife, Linda, who were in business together, you know, she said, if you want to take a day off a week to create a podcast, that's fine, but we can't replace you in the business. So like this thing has to generate an income. It has to be worth paying for. Otherwise, why do it? Unless you want to just do it at nighttime and, you know, do it as a hobby. And I said, no, I want to do this as a real thing. I think there's a market here for this. So, I had a membership portion of the podcast from day one. I got my first paid subscriber that first week. And I thought, oh, my God, wow, someone's happy to pay for this content. And I knew then the pressure was on me to produce content that was worth paying for. And that's how it's been ever since. No advertisers. It's 100% funded by the listeners, by the members.
Fantastic. But it's one of the things I've sort of learned, you know, as I've gone on with the podcast. But this podcast is like a mere 4 years old now. I think it's a product of the pandemic, basically. And I don't know how it was for you, but certainly for me, I had to learn how to podcast. Like, how does a podcast even work? You know, right from the beginning. And you mentioned that you'd already been doing another podcast beforehand. When you first got into podcasting at the very, very beginning, how easy or difficult was that for you?
I like to think I'm pretty tech savvy. I mean, being a photographer, we're pretty much operating a computer in our hands anyway these days. I mean, I started with film, but went to digital, and you know, we're working with computers all day, every day. So look, it wasn't too difficult. There were some technical things to wrap my head around, but I used to listen to podcasts on how to podcast, so to learn that way. And you know, I bought a good microphone. I still have the same microphone today. I've changed a couple of other little things. But yeah, look, it wasn't too I think anyone could start a podcast if they want to. And I've helped other photographers do the same thing. So yeah, look, it wasn't as difficult as I thought it would be. And it's probably even easier today.
And that's really the beauty of, you know, where technology is nowadays, is that, you know, something, because I remember, like, you know, in a previous life, I used to be a session musician. And so I used to work a lot with radio, local radio, you know, the BBC over here in the UK. And I remember, I mean, this goes back like 15 years ago or something, but I remember how difficult it was to just broadcast audio around the country, or, you know, around the globe. It required a team of people. You know, there was a producer, there was an engineer, there were the tech guys at the BBC local radio at the time. They had a satellite broadcast van parked out in the parking lot behind the building. And so they would run wires, and there'd be a person sitting in the van basically broadcasting this to a satellite. I mean, it was, you know, It was incredible. And of course, now here we are doing exactly the same thing, you know, I'm doing it out of my living room.
So yeah.
It's incredible.
It is. And like, you know, just before we started recording, you were talking about, this is amazing. Like, we're on literally other sides of the world recording this. And, you know, in everyone's pocket these days, we have this phone, which is, you know, more powerful than the first NASA computers that put a rocket on the moon. Like, it's incredible. It really is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, when you imagine that the iPhone, like, yeah, I think even the iPhone 4 or something was, like, more powerful than the mainframe computer in the space shuttle or something like that. It's nuts.
That's crazy. It is crazy.
I know. Does that mean that my Apple Watch can fly me to the moon? I think I'd like to say so.
Maybe.
But so when, you know, what were the main obstacles when you first got into podcasting, you know, seriously? You mentioned with, you know, PhotoBizX, it had to make business sense for you because it took you out of the business for a whole day. What were your initial sort of main obstacles?
Look, I think it would be myself just having the guts to ask the questions that I really wanted the answers to. So, and I think that is what separates my podcast from so many other podcasts these days. I mean, one of my first questions is, you know, what is your turnover when I interview a guest? How much money are you making? And if they give me a number, I want a breakdown of how are you achieving that number. Is that how many portrait sessions a month? How many weddings a year? What does the client spend on average? So they're the questions that I wanted to hear the answers to. But then when I'm interviewing, let's say, for example, someone like Jonas Peterson or, you know, throw any big name out there, Sue Bryce, you know, whoever, it was scary to ask those questions in the beginning. But then I had to get out of my way and remember that I was trying to produce content that was worth paying for, content that I wanted the answers to because I was fully immersed in my own business at the time as well. And I generally wanted to know. So if I wanted to know, I'm guessing that the listener wanted to know as well. And so I guess that was the biggest hurdle. Technology-wise, I don't think that was a drama. Scheduling was pretty easy.
not for me, as it turns out.
Yeah. Well, with the you know, with things like Acuity scheduling now, it makes it so much easier where it does all the time zone conversion. So we ran into some hiccups. But I mean, most of those things are simplified these days. I guess the other other sort of side of things that was difficult was making sure that I would have could have a premium feed and a free feed. So if I'm producing a free podcast, which I do every single week, that's easy. But to produce a premium podcast, which has a separate feed URL for my premium members that only works while their membership is current, that took a little bit more thinking. And I had the help of a web developer, Alex Vita, who is based in Romania. Absolutely incredible. He helped me get all that side set up. But once that was done, it was off and running. So that was, I sort of handed that off to the expert, him, and then he just told me what to do in the future. And then, yeah, it was easy.
That's actually a good question. I mean, how do you do that? Do you literally have two separate edits, like a longer edit and a shorter edit, and then you place them basically, essentially, as two separate podcasts? Or how do you do it?
Yeah, so what I used to do in the very beginning, I would say I'd be recording an interview with you. We would finish, and I'd welcome you back on. I'd say, Kirsten, we're going to record something extra for the premium members. And then I would go in and ask a separate set of questions that I think the listener would want to know that would want to know the answers to. Things that we might have touched on in the main interview, but we didn't go deep into, that I was saving for the members. That was getting quite convoluted and quite tricky, and it felt a bit strange. So what I do now is I record the full interview, and then I will chop out the best part of the second half and save that for premium members. So the free episode goes out every single week, as does the premium version, and the premium version is just generally 20 minutes longer, and it has that extra content.
Fantastic. What made you think of that? You mentioned earlier that it was something that you were thinking of pretty much right from the beginning.
Yeah, so I knew that if I wanted to do this, if I wanted to pull myself out of my photography business to have time to do this, it had to pay its own way. Everyone said this wouldn't work. Anyone I spoke to said this wouldn't work. I needed to have advertisers, and I did not want to have advertisers because I really dislike ads when I listen to podcasts. No offense if you have ads in your podcast. And I tend to skip over them, and I just don't like listening to them. And I don't like the ones that are, you know, that the hosts read as well. I mean, if I've got to do them, I would do them. But I thought, what's another way I could do this? And I thought, you know, how about I create a podcast that is, like I said, worth paying for, that the members, other photographers would be willing to put up some money for, to hear, so that they could benefit and grow their own business. So I said, I'm going to try a membership type podcast, and let's just give it a go. And like I said, I had my first subscriber in the first week, and you know, now there's over 1,000 members, and they're the ones that allow me to do it. And funnily enough, so because I was told so many times that this wouldn't work, I thought, I wonder if it would be much better to have advertisers. So I started another podcast, the Photography Experiment Podcast, and it was less business focused, but it still had that little bit of an element to it. And I had paying sponsors that would sponsor those episodes, you know, like editing companies, people that wanted to get in front of other photographers. And I just didn't enjoy that podcast and that process as much, having to search for advertisers, having to bill the advertisers, chase them up, be at their whim and talk about them more than I wanted to. So, yeah, I just didn't like the feeling of that. So I haven't recorded many of those episodes anymore, and I stick with PhotoBizX.
I think that's it's super important, you know, when it comes to podcasting, is to really ultimately, you know, do something that you love doing, you know. And this is, it's just like you said, you know, you didn't enjoy the other podcast as much. For me, you know, this will be episode 201, I believe.
Awesome.
And, you know, I made a good 160 episodes without ever getting paid a penny. And, it really is, I mean, the reason I'm doing this is because I love doing it. Essentially, you know, as all of our listeners by now know, because I've talked about it millions of times, it started out as a product of the pandemic. You know, it was basically self-preservation when everything shut down. I know you guys in Australia had severe lockdowns as well, similar to the UK, or even, I think, even worse than over here. But it was extreme. The first few lockdowns were extreme over here. And so, you know, I had to do something creative, and I was listening to podcasts. I was listening to your podcast, actually, one of the photo podcasts that I was listening to at the time, and a variety of others. And I thought, oh yeah, podcasting sounds like a cool platform. I like it, you know. And then of course things like Clubhouse sprung up at the beginning of the pandemic. I don't know if you remember that, but yeah. It's just all about audio and people having conversations and people talking to each other. And I remember when Clubhouse first started, yeah, I really quite enjoyed it because I was like editing or something, and there'd be like a live conversation going on. I'd be listening to podcasts as well. And so it just seemed like a natural thing to do. And one of the things that I wonder if you felt the same, I'm pretty sure you do, but I have learned a ton from talking to other photographers around the world. What kind of impact have those conversations had to you and your business?
Yeah, huge. I mean, like I said, I asked the questions that I wanted the answers to feed and grow my own business. And what did really surprise me was that whatever question I was brave enough or willing to ask, the guest would answer. No one, it was very, I could only think of one circumstance with one American photographer / marketer where she avoided every question. She was like interviewing a politician. It was excruciating. And at the time, I didn't have enough experience to really pull her up. But these days, I would say, listen, you've got to answer this question or we're going to stop the interview because this is ridiculous. Like, the listener will be pulling their hair out with you not answering these questions. But like I said, the majority, 99.9% of guests will answer any question I ask. So if I was struggling with any part of my business, and generally if I am, I know that other photographers are, I could ask this other photographer I was interviewing or photographers and get answers to those questions. So whether that was around pricing, marketing, advertising, converting leads into bookings, you know, handling objections, anything you can think of to do with business, they're the questions I was asking and getting answers to. And we were able to use those things in my business as much as the listener was able to use them in theirs.
I think that's one of the greatest advantages of doing this, you know, a podcast where you literally talk to other people who essentially know more than you do at that point. You know, it's just a learning experience. I remember, like, you know, people saying to me, especially for the first year or two, like, why are you doing this? Like, you know, you're not making any money out of it. It takes a ton of time. Like, well, what's the point? And I kept saying to them, look, you know, to me, this is my own personal university. I get to talk to all of these people who are so much, first of all, so much better than I am at what they do, and also like world leading, you know, in their particular genre of photography, for example, and I get to spend an hour, 2 hours with them, and I get to ask them anything I want. I mean, that's better than a university course. Just, I mean, you know, if you think about it, it's incredible. And, you know, the things I've learned, I have to say, have just been absolutely life-changing, you know, really life-changing. You know, on a business level, on a mindset level, you know, especially at the beginning, during the pandemic, it was crazy. You know, I could talk to people. I remember, you know, talking to Joe McNally and like being super nervous about having him on the show. And then literally within a minute or so, you know, we realized that actually we're all in the same boat. Like, you know, in the middle of the pandemic, lockdowns, you know, we all had the same fears, the same worries. And we ultimately were all doing the same things, you know, to get through this thing. And so all of a sudden, it was a great equalizer at a time. And so it was just worth its weight in gold. I always say I would have done it even if it paid me nothing. It didn't pay me anything for the longest time. So, you know, it paid me in knowledge. Knowledge and experience.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, yeah, it's hard to put a price on that. And I think you've probably discovered too that, you know, if you want to know the answer to something, there's a very good chance the listener wants to know the answer to the same thing. And for me, I don't know if it's the same for you, but for me, the highest and best compliment I can ever receive still to this day is, oh my God, you asked the exact question that was in my head as soon as I was thinking it, and you do it every single time with each guest. So if I hear comments like that from listeners, that just makes my day. That means I know that I'm doing the right thing and I'm asking the right questions.
Yeah, and it's that that listener interaction that also gives, especially for me, you know, gives you the energy and the impetus to carry on creating, because ultimately, you know, I know you're doing a weekly podcast. Same here. Like, you know, we're both in the same boat in that respect, and we have to put that next episode out, you know, week and week and week.
Absolutely, yeah. And then, look, it's a big commitment, and I think a weekly show is a great format, or it's a great length of time to release episodes. But like you know, it takes a lot of work. It takes planning. It takes scheduling, particularly if you want to go away. If I go on holidays, I still want to release an episode every single Monday, no matter what. And so that takes planning and it takes organizing, but that's business, isn't it? I mean, if I'm a photographer and I want to go away too, I've got to make sure that there's the funds in there to support that holiday. So I've got to do maybe some more sessions before I go away, or I need to change my pricing so I can afford to go on more holidays without worrying about work. So yeah, we're all in the same boat.
Yeah. But the planning thing is really true. You know, as you mentioned, like just, you know, having a few episodes in the bag in case, you know, you need to have that time off, for example, that's something I've learned the hard way. Really, is that I'm working a few weeks in advance so that I have that little bit of leeway. So if something happens, you know, I don't have to panic. And if I want to go away, I usually have a number of episodes, you know, ready to go out in advance. So we're recording this episode at the beginning of April. This will come out in about 3 weeks' time, I think. You know, just that gives our listeners an idea of the kind of time scale as to how it works.
Yeah. Look, I do exactly the same thing. And if I am brutally honest here, like I did come back away, I came home from a holiday last year. And for some reason, the scheduling, I had maybe a couple of cancellations or something, or reschedules. And I came back, I had zero episodes, and I had to have an episode out like in 3 days' time. I'm like, oh my God. So that's when I start calling friends, like, all right, I need you on the show. Can you do an interview? And quickly scramble and get some more in the bank quickly.
Hey, let me just jump in real quick to tell you about the amazing sponsor of this episode, Platypod. Platypod offers innovative camera support systems designed to unleash your creativity. With their stable, versatile, and portable solutions, you can capture stunning shots like never before. And I'm not just saying that. As the host of the Camera Shake podcast, I can personally vouch for Platypod's incredible products. They've become an integral part of the show. In fact, I'm surrounded by various Platypod products holding up lights, cameras, microphones, and so on. It's really helped to transform the way I make the show and the way I shoot at home, in the studio, and on location. But don't just take my word for it. Explore Platypod's website at www.platypod.com to discover their range of products, including the Platypod Extreme, Platybol tripod heads, and the brand new handle, of course. Make sure to follow Platypod on Instagram and Facebook at Platypod Tripods for exclusive updates, tips, and giveaways. By choosing Platypod, you're not only investing in your photography, but you're also supporting the Camera Shake Photography Podcast. Thanks again to Platypod, our amazing sponsor. Platypod, where innovation never sleeps.
Because you feel like you have an obligation to your listeners, to your subscribers. They're waiting for something every single week, and you want to deliver. I totally get that.
And I'm sure you get the same sort of comments. You know, it's where I get comments sometimes where people say like, I love listening to the Camera Shake Podcast on a Thursday morning on the way to work, and that's like my ritual.
Yes, exactly that. Yep.
Because the last thing you want to do is not show up.
100%. Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, and that's, the listeners, I mean, they could set their clocks or their watches by the release of the episodes every single week. So for me here in Australia, it's released on a Monday, but for overseas listeners, it's generally Tuesday morning when they get it.
Yeah, that time difference is something that I still haven't got straight in my head. But yeah, I have since then looked at online, like, you know, scheduling systems. Funnily, I mean, you mentioned Acuity. I actually used that on my website, so I kind of thought, that's a no brainer. I'm already using that. Dang it.
Yeah,
but yeah, there you go.
And lots of photographers are using Acuity as well now, because I mean, one of the biggest things with photographers in business, is converting that lead to a booking. And the quicker or the sooner you can get that potential client on the phone and have a conversation with them, the more chance you've got of delivering an amazing experience, getting a great client and making a great sale. And a lot of the photographers that I'm talking to and in my membership, they're using tools like Acuity, so the lead can book their own time slot for the photographer to call them. And it's helpful, I think, no matter what industry you're in.
So let's talk about the business side a little bit. You mentioned earlier that creating your podcast has answered a lot of questions for you in your business. What would you say were the biggest sort of business related revelations that you've had through your podcast?
I think the biggest one would have been Facebook ads. That's probably one of the biggest ones that I can go into more detail there. Pricing. Selling wall art collections instead of just single pieces, having a better mindset and certainly not judging. And I don't think I was too guilty of that. I think it sneaks in a little bit where you judge a client or a potential, you judge a client and what they might spend before you give them the opportunity to choose what they want. You automatically assume they're going to want something, whether it's big, if they drive a fancy car, or you think it might be something a small order if they drive a shitty old bomb. But it can be so deceiving because you just can't tell what someone wants. But and we can minimize the effect of that up and down of that sales process by delivering a great service and doing a good having a good qualification process. Yeah, so I guess to go back to your question, the biggest thing, Facebook ads.
Facebook ads is an ever evolving miracle, I think. Until you get your head around that. For any photographer starting out, or maybe, I know that a number of our listeners over here are probably at the point where they're thinking, well, I think I'm ready to go into business, or maybe I want to start a photography business as a side hustle, for example. Or maybe we're at the point where, we've been doing it as a side hustle for some time and now we're ready to go full time. What would be your first steps at that point?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Facebook ads would tie absolutely perfectly into that scenario. So if it suits any photographer, but specifically someone that's starting out, because this is a no-brainer. So if I was a good photographer and I wanted to dip my toe into the water and see if business was for me, if I really wanted to start charging for my work and see if that was a viable option, even as a side hustle, I would run a Facebook ad. I would offer free sessions, and I can tell you how to write this ad if you want to go into more detail. I'd offer free sessions, and I would include one small print or a digital file if you want to, And then I would generate leads that way. I would do those sessions, give the option to that client to take away their free digital file or their free print, and then try and sell more prints or more digital files or more wall art. Probably it's probably going to be digital files if you're just starting out, because you want to have a low overhead. You're not going to have samples, so digital files will be a very, very easy way to dip your toes into the water and see if photography business is something that you really want to pursue. So yeah, I'd offer one free digital file, try and sell more after delivering a great experience. And what that does is that puts pressure, proper business pressure, on the photographer immediately, because now you have a client. Even though they haven't paid anything, you have to deliver a great set of images for that client, no matter the lighting conditions, no matter the weather conditions. You're probably choosing the location. Like, this is all on you now. And the client might have some direction. And you know what will happen is you'll probably make the mistake of letting the client choose the location, choose the time. So you learn all these things as you go. But you then have to produce a set of images that are worth paying for that client. And there's no skin off your back. If you don't do it, so what? They get their free image or their free digital file, and you haven't lost any. You've lost a bit of time. You've probably given yourself half a heart attack. You've been through, you've got all sorts of butterflies and nerves. You've had the hot sweats, haven't been able to sleep at night. You've probably gone out and checked the location the day before. You've checked the lighting conditions, and then you turn up the day of the shoot and everything's different. Like, we've all been through those scenarios. It's absolutely horrible. But that's how you learn how to become a great photographer. And then you learn how to take control. But going back to the question, you know, if you put yourself in that position, it's very easy to do that with Facebook ads, to generate some leads with strangers, not with people you know, and then put that pressure on yourself to produce a saleable set of images that someone would want to buy and try and sell them. Perfect.
It's an interesting strategy, because you're basically using the free session as a magnet.
100%. That is your lead magnet. Yes. Yeah. And the way to do that effectively is to be specific with who you're targeting. So if you're a pet photographer, for example, you wouldn't run an ad looking for dog owners. You'd run an ad looking for Labrador owners. Or, you know, are you a loving family who owns a Labrador or has a Labrador as a child and love to get outside and play? You know, so you want to speak to your ideal client and target them specifically. You know, you might target large dogs, small dogs, terriers. You might target blue-eyed children or brown-eyed children or children under 10 with a pet dog, whatever. You want to be a little bit specific so that when the person reads your post, your ad, they think, oh my God, this photographer is talking to me. This is for me. And then you go on to talk about these free sessions and how they actually get those free sessions.
I suppose that's a great strategy also for somebody who's thinking of adding an extra bow to their string to the bow. Even. You know, I'm guessing, like, for instance, if you're a family photographer or family wedding photographer, I guess, and you're thinking about getting into corporate headshots, for example, then I'm guessing that would be a great strategy also to just, you know, increase your business in that way.
Absolutely. So headshots are a little bit different, a little bit more tricky, only because if you're giving away a headshot, chances are that client may only need one headshot. Whereas if I, do you have kids? Kirsten, I'm not sure if you have kids.
Yes, I do, yeah.
Okay.
So I was going to say unfortunately, but I don't mean that.
So what happens if I do a family shoot for you? Let's say your partner, your wife has seen my ad for a free family session in London. We're going to go down by the park and get some family photos. These are free. Plus, I'm going to include a free digital file. And I'm going to get on the phone. I'm going to talk to your partner, your wife. I may even talk to you. Tell me about your kids. Tell me about the park that you like to go to. Do you play any specific games when you're down there? Tell me about the kids. So I'm going to get all that information from you and relate better to you and your family. I'm going to meet you at the session and get all the photos that you told me that mean so much to you and your family and your wife. And then when you come back to see those photos or you look at them online, that some using something like PicTime or PixieSet, there's no way your wife is going to walk away with one free digital file. If I've delivered the amazing experience that I'm talking about here, she's going to want to buy lots more. Whereas with a headshot photographer, the chances are that client may be happy with just one photo. They may not be, but they may be happy with just one. So that's it's, I would still test it and I would make an offer that was very difficult to resist so that they, you know, they can get five images for just a little bit more and they can get all the images for just a little bit more again to try and entice them to take all the images or take more than just the free one.
You know, what's really worked well for me, especially with headshots, is I changed my pricing completely about 2 years ago now. Whereas initially I used to do what most headshot photographers do, where you have like a tiered pricing system. You have like, you know, set one, which is like, I don't know, 20 minute session or something, you know, and one headshot. Then you've got set two, which is like an hour, whatever, you know, with like four headshots. And then you've got set three, which is 2.5 hours with X amount of different headshots. This is just the typical kind of pricing structure that most people would have. And, you know, traditional sales psychology would basically say like, or like social behavior science would say like most people go for the middle, you know, the middle package basically. And that's true. But I changed that 2 years ago into a completely different pricing structure whereby I basically say, here's a session fee. That's the session fee. And then I actually say it comes with one headshot. But then it's a per photo on top of that charge. And I don't limit the time. So a session could be an hour. It could be 4 hours. It doesn't matter to me. The session fee is the same. Right. The advantage, you know, initially I remember when, you know, people used to, you know, let's tell friends or something, you know, they used to go, well, what if somebody takes up 5 hours of your time? Then it becomes completely, you know, inefficient. The reality, however, is if somebody, most people don't have 4 hours for a headshot session, you know, I do perfectly fine, but, you know, but most people don't. So usually, really, you're talking about probably 2 hours max, something like that, you know. The reality is, though, the more time they give me, the more looks I can go through, and I can pretty much guarantee you that they'll buy at least one hero shot from each look. And actually, right, when I broke that down after the first year and I compared the amount of money that I made, or the value, let's say, of each session compared to when I was doing the packages, I actually make a lot more money on each session now than I did before. And that's mainly because of the ability. There's two reasons. One, there's the ability of upselling throughout the session. So that's one thing. But the other thing is that what I found is that by using packages and putting a specific number of final shots or included shots in that package, it psychologically limits people to that number. And they kind of go, 100%. Oh yeah, this comes with three shots. I mean, do I really need to pay an extra fee for a fourth? Do I really need that? Oh, probably not. Three is okay. Because they're already so focused, like anchored on that number.
Yes.
That they're not open to, you know, to expanding that basically. And so I've found that when I was doing packages, I very, very rarely ever upsold on top of that. Maybe I wasn't as sales savvy back then, maybe. But what I find now is that it's much easier. It's actually guaranteed, 100% guaranteed, that people will, you know, pay for shots on top of that. And of course, also that gets molded around their budget. You know, if their budget only allows them to go this far, fine, you know. And very often, like if somebody's already buying like five shots or six shots and they're like umming and ahhing about the seventh one, you know what? I'm the first person to go like, you know what? I love this shot. I would never going to be touched this for you for free because, you know, I think, yeah, you know, let's just do that. Do you know what I mean? And then everybody's happy. And I think, you know, the interesting thing for me has been is that, you know, my clients are paying more, but they're leaving happy.
Perfect.
Which is great. So that, for me, when it comes to headshots, has actually worked. And this is...
So with your approach, then those that style of Facebook ads would work.
Yeah,
for sure. for sure.
Yeah. That's actually, it's interesting. I don't think I've ever done it. Oh, maybe, I tell you what, no, I have done Facebook ads at the very beginning when I first went into business, and they miserably failed. Miserably. So that's a really good thing to talk about, Facebook ads. How do you do it? Like, how do you do it right?
Well, the easy way is to write the ad, and then you create a post. Do you mean the technical side? How to do it?
Yes, both the technical side and also the content side, because I think that's where, well, I'm not 100% sure why I failed, but I would guess that's probably why I failed.
Let me try and break it down for you simply and for your listener or viewer. You want to, first of all, let's talk about a family, or do you want a family or pet photographer?
Let's start with family photographer. I think that's good. Pet photographer is also good.
Okay, let's do that. Okay, let's do a family. And you can adapt this to any genre that you photograph. So let's say I want to attract families. Now, it's a lot easier to advertise for children and then try and book the family in, because it's hard to get the dads often to come in for a photo session or commit to a photo session. So you try and talk to the mum in the ad by creating an ad that appeals to her. So you would start with a headline. Let's say, wanted children under 10 who love to get outside and play, are happy to get dirty, and I'll just rework that headline a little bit. So, yeah, wanted kids under 10 who love to get outside, play, aren't afraid to get dirty, and have some fun. Something like that. And then you would say, I'm offering 5 free sessions to build my online portfolio or to create some new samples for my studio. So these sessions are free. Yes, free. Plus, I'll include a free digital file or a complimentary digital file, or you could do a print. Or you could, if you're a more advanced photographer, I would advise you to give away a credit. So a $200 or £200 credit that you can apply to other products. So that's all included. And then you would say, then to get involved, you could say, let me know the age of your children. Down below, you could say, let me know your favorite park. Maybe not park. You've got to be a little bit careful that it's not going to come across as creepy and set people off. So you've just got to be a little bit careful with the question here. So I just reworked that to ask the simple question that they would be happy to answer down below. So let me know the age of your kids. Feel free to include a photo. The cuter, the better. Something like that. And then you would finish with, if you know a gorgeous family with the most beautiful kids who love the outdoors, please make sure they see this post. So what you're doing there is you're asking people to share and tag their friends without actually using those words, tag and share, because Facebook will pull you up on that. So, and then if my wife shares this ad with your wife, she's basically telling your wife that we think your family's gorgeous and you have the most beautiful kids. So she looks good for sharing it and tagging your wife. So that's the simple ad. You would try and have a captivating photo to accompany that ad. And before it becomes an ad, you would just make this a Facebook post on your page. So you need to have a business page to create an ad from the post. Now, you could go ahead and create this in Ads Manager, but the simplest way to do this is create a post on your Facebook page. Then you would go into Ads Manager once you're happy with the way the post looks, and you create a campaign that's going to direct people to that post. So if I was you, Kirsten, if you were the photographer we're talking to, you would create a campaign that's optimized for engagement, because we want people to engage with your ad. We want them to add comments or upload a photo of their kids. So there's going to be two choices. There's multiple choices, but the two main ones are optimized for engagement or optimized for clicks. And that's if we're going to send people to a landing page. So that's the more slightly more advanced way to do it. So let's say we optimize for engagement. We create an ad. We're going to target people within 25 miles of your location, for example, in London. And we're going to target women between the age of, let's say, 30 to 45, for example. That's probably your target client with that 10-year-old kids or below. Maybe a little bit younger, maybe 28, 26, up to 35, or sorry, 45. And we're going to target women because that's who is most likely to respond to the ad. And what else are we going to do in there? That's pretty much it. We're going to set our budget. We might set a budget, a minimum of $100 or £100 for 1 week. Just let it run constant for 1 week. £100 will be enough to let you know if this works or not. And then when you go down to the ad section, you're just going to choose existing post and you're going to select the post that you just created. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell. And then once it gets approved, that ad goes live. And then what Facebook is trying to do, so even though you're in your scenario, it didn't work the first time, Facebook is doing everything it can to see your ad succeed because it wants you to succeed so that you spend more money on ads. So it's not Facebook's fault if something doesn't work. It's trying to get the right people to see your ad. A couple of things I didn't mention that I would do if I was starting out is you can choose inside the Ads Manager where your ad is shown. I would, for a new photographer, only show my ad on the Facebook feed. So not in streams, not in search, not in stories, not on Instagram, not to start with, just in the Facebook feeds. And then you can monitor how that works and Facebook doesn't gobble up your budget too quickly. And you know exactly which ads. So if I show it on in all those places, I can go into the stats and find out which was more successful, but my budget gets used very, very quickly. So just in the feeds. And then you basically sit back and wait for it to work. Now you need to give the ad or Facebook or Meta at least 48 hours to start finding the right audience that's going to actually respond to your ad. And then you should start getting some comments. A little side trick. What I would do is I would say, get one of your friends or two of your friends to upload a photo of their kids and reply to your post. And not giving away the fact that you're friends, just because people feel more confident to upload photos of their children or their pet or whatever if someone else has done it first. Once people start responding, then you have the option to PM or DM someone directly from Facebook. And then there's a couple of different ways. We can go into it if you want to, but we can either send people to a landing page, but basically we want to take them from Facebook into our hemisphere or into our orbit where we can actually make contact with them and talk to them. I want to get them from Facebook, maybe to email, maybe to SMS or text, but preferably on the phone. So I'm going to be doing everything I can to get them on the phone. I might do that via a landing page. I might take them to Acuity Scheduling to schedule a call. And then I'm trying to, when I get them on the call, find out if they're likely to spend more money or not. So let me give you a real life example. Let's say I ran, as a wedding photographer, I've done this lots of times. I run an ad for engaged couples in my area that have been engaged for 6 months. And it's a similar style of ad. Then let's say I get 20 replies, 20 applications to my landing page. If the couple has already booked a photographer or they don't have their wedding booked yet or they're having their wedding way out of town where I don't service, then they go to the bottom of the pile. They're not going to get contacted. They're not going to get the free session. But the couples that live near me, that are getting married near me, that don't have a photographer booked, that are booking or have booked a reception venue that I love and I know they're going to be a great couple, bang, I'm on the phone to them straight away trying to book them in for a free engagement session. And chances are once we connect that engagement shoot, they're going to be booking me for their wedding. So you can use this for any genre of photography. I keep going. So does that help? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, this, when it comes to Facebook ads, this is sort of my impression when I speak to people who are maybe toying with the idea of Facebook ads. But I think there's a number of factors that hold them back. Maybe one is the cost factor, obviously the cost factor in relation to return on investment. So you mentioned at the beginning it's roughly about $100 or £100 to let it run for a week. How long do you let an ad run like this? A week or
1 week
or a month?
1 week.
1 week.
1 week. Yeah, so look, sorry, in the beginning, a week. So there's other photographers that I know and work with and have interviewed, you know, that they will have 6 to 10 ads running all the time and spending $3,000 to $5,000 a week on ads. And they're photographers that have a studio and they've got the ability, but they've got multiple photographers and they've got the ability to process that number of leads. They've got a lot of automation going on in the background. So they're qualifying those leads and they have the ability to photograph that many clients and families. So if I'm just starting out, which is how we sort of started this conversation, and I was thinking about going to business, then yeah, I would run the ad. I'll just run it for 7 days, spend £100 or $100 and just test the waters. Get used to talking to a client on the phone. Get used to scheduling the session. Get used to being under the pressure of having to deliver great images no matter the lighting or the weather conditions. Get used to then uploading those files once they're edited onto PicTime or PixieSet, setting up a price list, and making a sale. So that is a massive, big jump for someone that's just getting started. But that's the easiest way to do it. And I can give you a listener or viewer some ideas on how to price that if they want to get started, if you want to go down that road, or we can talk more about ads. I mean, I'll be led by you here.
Yeah, sure. I mean, let's say it sounds like creating the Facebook ad is pretty straightforward. You don't necessarily need to hire a marketing expert for that. No. You've got a little bit of budget on the side that you can spend on putting an ad out. Now you're getting some leads in, and then you mentioned the next step then is to basically take those and move them away from the Facebook platform into your own sort of domain so that you can actually speak to them on your terms almost, and get them on the phone. So you can use something like Calendly or Acuity or something like that to create a scheduling system. Now you've got them on the phone. So now how do you then turn that free session into a return of investment? So that's the next thing. It's basically the sales talk.
Right. Okay, so let me go back one tiny step. So we mentioned Acuity and Calendly. So for the listener or viewer that is just starting out, you do not need that. You can just go on Messenger and say, let's book a time. Is it better for me to call you Tuesday or Thursday afternoon or morning? Oh, Thursday afternoon. Great. Here's my number. I'll send you a text before so you know it's me, and then I'll give you a call around 5 o'clock, something like that. So you don't need to spend money to make money on lots of fancy stuff. You do need to spend money on the ads, but you don't need all the other things to get going. So for the phone call, let's say I'm calling you. I generally call the mother first because she's the one that responded to the ad. But let's say it's you. If you're happy to roll, do you want to role play this?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Let's right. Do it.
So Kirsten, I'm gonna you answer the phone. Hey, it's Andrew here from Impact Images. Just calling about the Facebook post that you responded to about the free family shoot. Can you answer a couple of questions and we get to know each other? And you would say yes. And then I'm going to go in and ask you, just tell me about your children. You posted a photo. What are their names?
So my children's names are Cara, Lucy, and Sam.
Cara, Lucy, and Sam. Okay, so I'd go in and ask you about their ages. And then did you guys go to a local park? Like, what do you do in your spare time? Do you go play in the backyard? Do you go to a local park? Do you go swimming?
Yeah, we go to the park or we go to the beach. That's mainly
beach. Okay, fantastic. Okay, so which beach? Is it local?
No. it's about an hour away from okay. Where we are.
All right. So if it's a beach, if I want to shoot at the beach, I'm going to go and explore that more. And I might even have that as one of my questions on my landing page, but I'm going to ask you about this beach. Oh, you know what? I've done some sessions there before with other families. They were absolutely amazing. I'll send you a link to a couple of blog posts so you can see some of those photos. Tell me about the kids, a little bit more about each of the kids. So you said Sam. How old's Sam?
He's 21.
21, awesome, unreal. And is he still living at home?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm going to go and ask you a little bit. So I can see like you're already smiling, like you're happy to talk about your son, you're proud of him. I'm going to find some, do you guys do anything together, like just the two of you guys?
Oh, yeah, we go to museums a lot. That's what we do. We go into town, into London.
Yeah, right. Okay. So I'm looking for little things that you guys do together. And I'm going to do the same thing with your wife and just, I'm trying to find some things I want you to be gushing about your family to me. Okay. Yeah. So if we do this photo session at the beach and we get photos of your whole family, would you like to see photos of everyone looking at the camera smiling, or are you thinking of something more natural, more candid?
Oh, I like candid photography. Yeah.
Right. So like all walking down the beach together, laughing, talking. So don't have to be looking at the camera. Is that what you're thinking?
Exactly. Yeah. That sounds great.
So if we got that kind of photo, are you thinking of a little album for the coffee table? Are you thinking of having something on the wall at home? What are you picturing from this session?
Oh, an album would be great, you know, and some wall art would be amazing.
Well, okay, so have you had family photos before?
No, it's the first time.
Oh, wow, okay. So in your house, like, where would you like to, which room would you like to walk into and see this photo of you and your family down the beach having fun as they are right now? Like, where could you see that in the house?
I totally see that in the living room or in the hallway for sure.
Nice. Okay. Tell me about the living room. Is it like above the sofa, above the TV?
Yeah,
Yeah.
We have some blank spots on the wall that need filling for sure.
Unreal. Unreal. So this is what, this is a normal conversation, and then once we've sort of gone through a little bit of this, then it's like, look, if you're happy to get something scheduled, I'd love to work with you guys. I know we can get some amazing photos. The kids sound incredible. I love the fact that you've got a 21-year-old son that's going to be there for the family photo. It's so hard getting those older guys in sometimes. So this is going to be great. How's next Saturday for you guys?
Sounds perfect. Let's do it.
All right, awesome. So we work out a time and then we're booked in. And I know now, after having a chat to you and potentially your partner, your wife, that I'm going to be looking to get those images that you've just described to me, because you pretty much told me you want a family photo all walking down the beach in your living room above the sofa where you've got some blank wall space. Like, sale's done.
Yeah, what's amazing, actually, I'll tell you what I really liked about this was that you really made me think about you based the whole conversation around me and, you know, my living room. And so it was, yeah, it makes perfect sense. Absolutely. Because you can see yourself in it. You know?
That's exact. And I think what the new or some photographers tend to do is talk about how good they are. You know, all the shoots they've done, how good they are with different light, how good they are with the weather. I mean, that's a given. Like, that's, I don't need to go into all that. I'll show that with my photos once we get there on the day at the beach, if I need to, just by demonstrating my skills and what I'm able to do then. But at this point, this is all about you and your family. I want to get to know you and your family. And you've already pictured that photo on your wall, potentially the size. We didn't go in any sizing. We didn't talk about individual photos of the kids, their personalities. So, I mean, you talked about Sam, you and him love to go to the museums. So is he more of an introvert or an extrovert?
He's quite an introvert. I mean, he studies paleontology. So it's all about dinosaurs.
Okay. So if he's down the beach, is he looking for shells and things like that? Or is he just...
He'll look at shells. He'll look at the geology, you know, and it's a never-ending... fountain of knowledge about any piece of rock you'll find anywhere.
Okay, so this beach that we're going to go to, is there rocks there as well?
Yeah, there will be. Yeah, of course. Yeah, we have a lot of. Yeah, it's you know, over here in the UK, especially where we live in the south of England, you know, we have a lot of those kind of beaches, you know, cliffs, rock formations, that sort of thing, and an abundance of all sorts of fossils and all that kind of stuff. So, you know.
Unreal. So, I mean, to me, I'm picturing, I don't know about you, but I'm seeing photos of Sam under the cliffs, on the rocks, in his element. And I'm planting those seeds, or you're planting them for me to give back to you. And so there we go. So now I've got an individual photo of Sam. I've got the whole family shot. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the girls. You're going to be as excited about this session as I am before we even get there.
Yeah. And again, it makes perfect sense because I agree with you. The thing is, what I hear a lot with photographers, especially sort of in the beginning, is that, as you said, they talk about themselves and about their skills. And I often think that, well, you know, I'm a professional. If I hired a professional, a plumber, let's say, to fix my bathroom or my kitchen sink, right? like the fact that they're using certain tools is A, irrelevant to me, and B, it's sort of, well, that's, it's kind of baseline expectation, you know, like, you know, if you're a plumber and I'm hiring you to fix my kitchen sink, then A, I don't really care what tools you use. I just need the job to be done. And also, again, it's my base level of expectation is that you're a professional who knows what you're doing.
Yeah, imagine the plumber says, oh, you called the right guy. I've got the new Mark III wrench. It's going to be awesome. Yeah, exactly. Like, mate, I don't care. It just fixed the leak.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly it.
But if that same plumber gets on the phone and says, just tell me about the leak. You know, where does it look like it's coming from? What colors? Is it a brown stain coming from the, you know, in the water? Like, tell me about this. How long has it been there for? Like, this guy's engaged and interested. Man, he's got the job.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then, of course, you know, on a professional level, if that plumber can do it in 10 minutes whilst everybody else would take half an hour, then, you know, you'd be super thrilled as a customer, and you leave him a, you know, glowing, I don't know, Google review or something, which will
absolutely,
you know, help them in their business. So there's a lot of that. So let's say we've done our Facebook ads, we've gotten some leads, we've done a really successful sales talk, and we're now actually, we've got some sessions booked in. So now we've got them coming in for the free session. We're now trying to monetize on that session by upselling, you know, additional products, because that's our hope. We've, you know, offered them a free session. And although you could argue, okay, well, we're getting some portfolio images in for that, which will help us later down the road. But actually, we need to kind of get a little bit of return on investment in that. What is your sort of main upsell strategy during and after the session?
So if we're staying with families, then it really depends on the stage the photographer's at. So let's say we're talking to the newer photographer that's breaking into business. Then you're going to talk about what's going to happen with the images afterwards. So let's say what I'll do is I'll upload an edited gallery to PicTime or PixieSet. I keep mentioning those two because they're the two most popular ones, but there's other options there as well. And what I'll do is I'll send you a text message, let you know when the gallery is available. And you're going to go in and pick your free digital file, and then you're going to have the option to purchase more or all the files. And I can promise you, when you see them, you are going to fall in love with them. So get ready to get your credit card out, because you're going to love them. And it's like, you can make a joke about it. It's totally fine. If I'm talking to your wife, I'd say, maybe go and look at the gallery without cursing the first time so that you can see the prices, because you're going to want to buy the whole lot. Whatever. It depends on the relationship and how it's all going. So you can make a joke about it, but yeah, I'm going to let them know how it's going to work. For the beginner photographer or for the newer photographer, what I would suggest is when you upload all your photos to one of these online galleries, they're already edited. I wouldn't have too many photos. Like, don't make it too hard on yourself or on the client. So, you know, 20 to 30 photos is plenty. Even if you shot 1,000, like, you can try and get it down to 20 or 30. So it's not too overwhelming for you or the client to do the edits and for them to choose. Then I would price very strategically. So they get their free image. And then I would say something like a single image, an extra single digital file is $200, for example. Five images is $600, and all the images are $1,000. So to me, we've taken them straight past the middle package and made the top package a no-brainer. So it's $200 for one, $1,000 for all of them. Like, to me, like, if I've had the conversations that we've had, delivered the experience and had some great photos, there's no way your wife is walking away with one photo. And you're going to, even when she's talking to you and you see the prices, like, it just makes sense to get all of them. So you've got a price for one, for five, for all. And if you really want to be a little bit more creative, you can say, for the next 48 hours, once the gallery's live, I'm going to give you a 15 or 20% discount. And usually people will buy when you send the reminder text message at 40 hours, with 8 hours to go, to saying, hey, the link expires in 8 hours. This is your last chance to get that 20% off. That's usually when most people will buy. That's the easiest way to make money as a photographer when you're starting out.
And it's not, again, from a psychology point of view, that's quite interesting. Like, your pricing structure is interesting because the quantity, so you go 1, 5 and all, the middle package is closer to the lowest package. But in terms of pricing, the amount is actually
to the top.
Closer priced to the top. Yeah, so you're basically making it appear a much better value to go for all. Because $600 now for 5 doesn't sound like that great a value compared to $1,000 for all of it, for 20 or 30 shots.
No. Yeah, but it's still way better than 1 for $200.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, exactly.
So it's an easy leap all the way along.
And I guess, I mean, you mentioned earlier, the similar thing would also work for, let's say, a pet photographer. You know, if you wanted to, like, yeah, you know, if you have a dog, I have a dog, I have a crazy dog. He's crazy. he's a criminal dog now. He has a prior. Yeah, he should.
Does he?
Yeah, he unfortunately he nips people, I should say.
Okay.
He's a quite nervous dog. And unfortunately, somebody walked around the corner the other day, and he managed to nip him in the back of the leg. So it wasn't dramatic, you know, it wasn't like a massive dog bite or anything, but enough to scare people. You know, that's enough. And so he's a really cute cocker spaniel. You would never, when you look at him, you think like, oh, he's super cute. He's not. He's, you know.
So if I ran a Facebook ad that said wanted crazy spaniels, you know, would you notice that ad?
Oh, 100%. That's us.
Yeah. See? Yeah, exactly. And yeah, obviously I want to be skillful enough as a dog photographer to be able to cope with those kind of dogs. But yeah, that's a perfect example. I want to speak to the dog owner and appeal directly to them.
Because I think one thing I've noticed over the last, I don't know what it is, over the last like 6 months or something, I've had lots of people mention to me that, you know, they might be looking at like a sideline and like shooting pets. I don't know if it's... Is it the time of the year? Or what's going on? Is it maybe all the lockdown puppies are now coming to a certain age or something? But it seems to be going
well. Maybe. But look, it's a great genre. It's popular. It's very profitable. There's lots of opportunity there. People spend money on their pets. They love their pets. Yeah. They're like kids these days. So, yeah, why not?
Yeah, people spend crazy money on their pets. I think what's really interesting about pet photography in particular, you know, so if you're listening and you're thinking, or maybe you haven't thought about shooting pets before, it might actually be a good idea. I'll tell you why. So my youngest daughter, she's 12 now, but this must have been before the pandemic. So she must have been about 7 or 8. She does like photography, and I got her own little camera, and then I got, you know, she used like one of my Fuji X100 models, you know, to just take snapshots. But we're some lakes here. We go to the lakes quite a lot. And so sometimes we take our cameras and, you know, we photograph things. And we were having this conversation, I remember. She was about, must have been maybe 7. We were having this conversation. And I said to her, she goes like, oh, I really like taking photos. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So what do you like taking photos of? You know, do you like photographing people or landscapes or trees, you know, or birds, like what's your thing? And she goes, well, I don't like shooting people. I'm like, okay, no competition for me then, that's great. And then she said, I really like photographing dogs. I'm like, okay, that sounds good. There's lots of dog walkers around here. And she goes like, oh, maybe I can just photograph some dogs, you know, that walk around the lake. And I said, okay, but, you know, you can't just go up to somebody and start photographing a dog. You have to ask them for permission first. Okay. And, of course, as a parent, I fully expected that would be my job, right? Going up to people, going like, excuse me, you know, do you mind if my daughter took a picture of your dog? Blah. Far from it. She was 7 at the time. She would walk up to people, this cute little blonde, long-haired girl with a camera, you know, walking up to people going, excuse me, do you mind if I take a picture of your dog? And of course, every single person would say yes, absolutely, right. You know, absolutely. And of course, then they would try to pose the dog and the dog wouldn't play ball and all that. You know. But it was just interesting. It's really interesting to see how pet owners would immediately be like, oh yeah, oh, absolutely, yes. You know, so there clearly is that sense of pride, obviously, in their pet. That translates perfectly into a business opportunity.
For sure, 100%. Yeah, dogs, horses, they're probably the two main type of pets or animals that I hear about people photographing successfully. Some cats, but not so many. But yeah, dogs and horses, amazing.
And so you would go about it in exactly the same way, like set up a Facebook ad, focus it on the pet owner, obviously, in your area.
Yes, I'd be targeting, again, a specific breed or size of dog. Obviously, you don't want to be so niche that there's not going to be enough people that see your ad. So, you know, you can go for small or large dogs. So you can go for terriers, for shepherds, for the spaniels. I know in my area, there's a lot of schnauzers. So you could certainly run an ad for schnauzers, but you could test this stuff. So let's say I run my ad and I run it for a week and Facebook only uses 50% of my budget, so $50, and there's only a few leads and not many people are seeing it. Okay, that didn't work. So I just stop the ad. Let's just rewrite it or start a new ad and target, you know, large dogs or small dogs and see if that works. So you can't, I know you did this, but you can't just have one try at something and then stop because it didn't work. Because there's a good chance it just needs a little bit of finessing, testing and measuring and going again. Because not many people ever get everything right the first time.
And you're absolutely right. I think that's the cardinal mistake. And that's certainly a mistake that I made in the beginning where, you know, I ran an ad, didn't seem to have much traction. And then, you know, then, of course, the next thing you think is, well, now I'm going to have to, you know, throw more money at it. And, you know, it's like, you know, then you have to make the decision as to whether you think it's worth it or not, or whether there may be other. And, of course, when you start out in business, there are many ways that you can get leads and customers, you know, Facebook ads being one, networking being another one. But it always depends on exactly who you're targeting and also what your sort of lead times. I always find, like, with networking, it's one of these things that can really work well, but it's a long-term thing. It's not going to translate into, because you're building up trust and that just takes time. And so what I found in my experience, I do the main part of my business is basically corporate, and networking events are very important for that, but they really are, it's a long-time investment. You invest a lot of time. It's very front-loaded. You know, It's a little bit like running a podcast where you spend a lot of time up front until it gets anywhere.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's the sort of thing.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why, you know, when you ask me what's something that I learned from doing the podcast interviews, what's something that a newer photographer could capitalize and use in their own business? So Facebook ads, I didn't know how to run that ad. I would never have thought of running an ad and structuring that ad that way until I interviewed a photography business coach who shared that idea. So I recorded the interview, and then me and a ton of listeners all did the same thing. We all got into the Facebook group, shared our results, and that's been going, I think, now for probably 6 or 7 years. That style of ad still continues to work incredibly well today. The pricing structure, I didn't think of that. That was from an interview guest, Nick Peel. He had a full-time job and he was doing photography on the side. Loved photographing kids and families, but didn't have time to do in-person sales. So he said, what's a good way to make great sales without doing all the extra work at the other end? So he came up with that pricing structure using PixieSet and the 48-hour discount. So he would do 2 or 3 families on a Saturday, photograph them, and that's an extra $3,000 coming into his account on the weeks that he was shooting. And he didn't have to allocate too much time to all the other things apart from the shooting. So that's, you know, so I guess what I'm saying is we don't have to do all the, you don't have to discover this stuff yourself. You can subscribe to a podcast, you can listen to watch a YouTube video, you can download a course, you can go to a seminar. Other people have already paved the way for us. We can learn from them without, you know, doing all the trial and error. Implement what you learn and then modify and try and make it better to suit yourself.
I think that's the key. Implementation is actually the key, you know, because there's a wealth of knowledge out there. As you mentioned, you know, the fantastic podcasts like PhotoBizX that will have virtually all the answers in there. But then the next step really is just implementing it, you know. And also like being willing to experiment and to try things out, you know, and to measure and test, you know, as you said. The everlasting argument between generalist and specialist in things. What's your sense on that? Because it's, you know, I always think it's a good idea to experiment with things, but how do you see that balance between being a specialist or a generalist in something?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? It is the eternal question for photographers in business. I think it depends on where you live, on the population that you're surrounded by, and potentially the type of population. So where I live here, I'm north of Sydney. It's not a massive population, so I could survive quite comfortably just doing weddings. But if I added families, everything just doubles or triples or quadruples because I've just opened up my market so much more. Look, I could possibly be a commercial photographer only, but I'd have to drive to Sydney. Do I really want to do that? So these are the questions you have to ask yourself. Could I be a dog photographer here? Yeah, potentially. There's enough dogs. So that would probably work on its own, or a family photographer on its own. So I think it depends on where you live. If you live in London, for example, I mean, really, you should be able to specialize in whatever you want to specialize in if you're good at it and you're willing to work at it. So you could be just a headshot photographer, or just a branding photographer, or just a wedding photographer, because you have the population to support that genre.
And it really does depend on where you live. Like London, for instance, London is actually one of these funny cities where when you live in London, you don't really venture out, if you know what I mean. It's like it's because everything is so close to your doorstep. Even just, you know, getting on a tube for 45 minutes already seems like a major act, you know, when everything else is like 10 minutes away from you.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I've found, for instance, being here in the suburbs, it's this thing. When I first moved here, you know, I kind of thought, oh, it's perfect. I'm surrounded by film studios. Like, this is literally the British Hollywood. You know, we've got Pinewood down the road. We've got Warner Brothers on the other side. You know, Apple are building a massive studio. There's L Street just down the road. I mean, it really, like, lots of iconic film studios. Just the next place is the next village for me is called Denham, where Denham Film Studios used to be a big thing all the way from the 1920s. They just converted that whole back lot into flats and apartments for some reason. But, you know, there's tons of film studios. So I kind of thought, like, oh, well, there's lots of film studios. So clearly, there must be lots of actors around. So therefore, doing actors' headshots must make sense, right? But what I did find out was that really actors don't live out here. They live in the city. And so it's hard for them to venture outside, out of the city to have their headshots done, because they have so many options of having their headshots done in town.
Right.
You see what I mean? So
yeah.
So, you know, so for me, I found that although in the very beginning, this actually goes back to way before the pandemic, I kind of thought, right, I'm going to really focus on actors' headshots. Turn out that 98% of my clients turn out corporates. So it was very clear that, you know, corporate headshots do work much better here, because they're small businesses, mid-sized businesses, and large businesses all around here. And of course, as far as large businesses are concerned, it's much cheaper for them to have their HQs outside of London than in town. So actually, I'm in a better position, in a better location for that than it would be for actors. But it's one of these things. So you have to experiment, you have to try out things.
I would also argue that your clients now would, I'm sure, I'd bet my life on it, that they would have more money to spend than most actors as well, all these corporate clients.
Yes, and exactly. And when we were talking about, you know, changing pricing structures earlier, and as I explained, that really only works for corporate clients, because actors, as you said, just don't have the capital to, you know, that's one of the things I found. It's when I figured, well, you know what, I should raise my prices, which is, again, is one of these tricky steps that every photographer finds themselves in. It's like, oh God, am I charging too little? Am I charging too much? You know, what's the, you know, shall I dare to increase my prices? You know, I found when I increased my prices, it was the best thing. It's the best thing I've ever done, because for two reasons. One, clearly, each session is more profitable, which is good for me, but also it's changed the clientele. A good example for that would be, first of all, they stripped out all these pesky actors. No, I'm not kidding. I love working with actors, but it's true. I mean, it's like it has literally just, you know, focused it even more on corporates. But what it has also done is stripped out a lot of phone calls where people were trying to get a cheap headshot, which are just simply not the clients I want to necessarily work with. Yeah. And I always say this, like, there's a guy down the road from me who does what I call 60 quid headshots. I don't know if he still charges 60 quid, but that's certainly what he used to charge. And if that's what somebody's looking for and if that's what somebody needs, fantastic. I know just the guy, you know, absolutely perfect. That's not the product that I create. It's not what I do. It's not what I want to do. And that's not the client I'm looking for, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's a difference there. He may be shooting a lot more than I am. I'm pretty sure he is. But also he has to shoot more in order to get to the same income level. So for me, it's about finding the right clients. And this is why, you know, I don't know if you agree or not, but maybe this is something that once you started your business and once you're getting to know your business and your, you know, your clients a little bit better, then the next step might be to move on to not necessarily taking on every client, but making sure that you find the very specific client that you are actually looking for. Would you agree with
that? Yeah, I would. And I'm listening to you describe your business and listening to your thoughts there. I mean, what comes into my head is it's so specific to the individual, because I know you can also have a very successful, high volume, low cost photography business. I mean, a couple of guests come straight to mind. One is a New Zealand, a Maori-based photographer. She only photographed Maori families. They live in Australia or New Zealand, and they have a very, very successful business, hundreds of thousands of dollars each year, and they charge very, very little. But they've got it down to a fine art. They get them in, shoot them, everything's done in 5 or 10 minutes, off to the next family comes in. So, yeah, it depends on the kind of business you want. But I would rather have your lifestyle, higher-paying clients and shooting less and more time with my family.
Yeah.
Depends what you want.
Exactly. It absolutely depends on what you want. And you're absolutely right. So there's two basic business models here. It's high volume, low cost, and high cost, low volume, depending on what it is that you want to do. So, you know, I think of the likes of, I don't know, who comes to mind, Australian, let me think. Jerry Guiones, for example. Very high cost, probably, well, I don't know if it's low volume, but probably relatively low volume compared to others.
I would say so.
You know, but high income. And it's the kind of luxury brand type of thinking. I wouldn't necessarily call my headshots luxury brands, not at all. But I made that very specific decision at some point where I thought, like, you know, I don't want to work myself ragged, basically. And I do want to, because I have to do other things. I have to do this podcast. That's one of the things. I need time for that.
Exactly.
But yeah, and then it's about positioning your business, you know, specifically based on what it is that you want to achieve. There are as you mentioned, there are excellent examples for low cost, high volume. Like, a good example is if you go around a shopping mall or a post office like a supermarket over here in the UK, at least, might be the same with it. You'll find a passport photo machine. Mm-hmm. In like a photo booth in each one of those establishments, absolutely, where you can get passport photos made for next to nothing, right? Super low cost, mega high volume, and the guy who runs that company, who owns these machines, is probably living in the biggest villa by the beach. That's
you know,
it's a great example.
True. Yeah, I mean, there is examples of both ends, but I guess and what we haven't really mentioned is that the middle level photographer or price tiered photographer, that's probably the most dangerous, scary place to be, because that's the one that's getting compared to all the other middle ones. So it's you almost want to be at one end, or you want to be at one end or the other. Being in the middle is a dangerous place to be, in business wise and advertising, and like, everything's more difficult in the middle.
Yeah, it's true. That's absolutely true. I mean, that's definitely my experience when it comes to working with corporates. And I'm not necessarily talking headshots. I'm talking like corporate projects, where there's almost an expectation that you charge at a certain level. And when you first get into that, it can be really quite daunting. Again, this comes absolutely from my own experience, where you think, I remember the first shoot I signed for like for $5,000. I remember that. And I'm thinking, $5,000? Bloody hell. Like, they could have paid me $5,000? For really? What the hell?
Yeah.
It turns out if I'd asked for $7,000, they would have paid me $7,000. You know.
Hindsight.
Hindsight, right? Exactly. Yeah. It's one of these things. But it's, yeah, you kind of need to learn to play at that level. And what I found is that it's not necessarily that the expectations are higher at that level. It's that the expectation for clarity is higher. Like, that's what I find with my corporate clients. As long as there's absolute clarity over what it is that I'm going to provide, when I'm going to provide it, as long as these expectations are really tied down and nailed down, then everybody's happy. And
I think at wedding clients, you know, when I was charging, you know, $1,500, $2,000 as compared to charging $4,500, $5,000, it was just a different experience. I mean, there was less drama with a higher paying client. It was just, they got out of your way and they just trusted you to do your work. Whereas the cheaper, the lower cost client or the client that was paying less wanted to micromanage every part of the day. It was a nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, it's weddings are one of these things. I've shot some weddings, a handful of weddings. I'm not a wedding photographer by any stretch of the imagination, but if I've dipped my fingers in it, and I know a little bit about it, most of which comes from guests I've had on the show, if I'm brutally honest, when it comes to weddings in particular. But I've shot some weddings myself, and I know what the main pitfalls are. I also know how huge the responsibility is for it, not screwing up somebody's special day.
You know? Yes. 100%.
How did you first get into wedding photography or into photography in general?
So I was a mad keen fisherman, and I wanted to get published in fishing magazines back in the day. And I could comfortably write articles, but to get published, you needed to submit photos with it. So I bought a camera. I bought a few rolls of slide film. Or E6 film, and I learned how to shoot really quickly. And because you're shooting slide film, there's no latitude with your exposures. You have to get it spot on, otherwise they don't work. Same as shooting, say, JPEG on a digital camera today. If you're overexposed, you can't bring those highlights back. So I learned to shoot pretty quickly. I worked hard at it, got published in magazines, loved the photography as much as the writing, and I had a friend who I played football with. He was a wedding photographer part-time. I said, can I come out to a couple of weddings and assist? He said, yeah, sure. And then he allowed me to take some photos after I'd assisted a few times. He let me use those photos in a portfolio for me. And then I booked a friend's sister's wedding. An interesting story is, so this very first wedding I did, and it was for free, they just paid for double prints so I could have a portfolio. They were quite a large couple. And I had a great day, and I worked my butt off to make them look as amazing as I possibly could. I used all the skills I had at the time, and they love the photos. I love the photos. And that was my one and only full wedding of this large couple. And we went to a bridal expo back in the day, Linda and I, and we booked, I think it was 40 or 50. It's incredible. We absolutely got booked out. Because part of the reason was because it was a massive bridal fair. Part of the reason was because we had an empty calendar, because I hadn't booked any weddings until then. So anytime someone said, did you have this Saturday in September free? We'd like, we'll just go and check the diary. It's like, yeah, of course we do. We've got no bookings. And what happened was I booked all or predominantly large couples, because I was the only photographer in the whole expo that had a portfolio showing a large couple. Everyone else had slim model-like looking couples in all their demo albums, their display albums. I was the only one that had a large couple, and I booked every single large couple that came through, it felt like, that expo. And that's how I got started. And that was it. The year filled up really quickly. And it just went from there. I was still working full time. I eventually went part time at that job. And then I started taking on some family portraits and then quit the full time job. And that was it. We're off and running.
Fantastic. Do you still fish?
Very rarely. I took up cycling and golf instead. So, very rarely, but I was occasionally.
Cool.
I got plenty of cover photos and articles published, and it was an amazing period, and that's what got me into photography.
Fantastic. So you mentioned you started shooting on slide film. Is that something you still do, film photography, or?
Very, very little. I think there's a film camera behind me in the background there, the twin lens reflex. Very, very rarely these days. My son got into a little bit, and he enjoys it, the film photography. I'm one of the, I'm scared to say this, I'm still one of the JPEG shooters out there. I never shoot raw. So still grew up with slide film, excuse me. And then grew up shooting slide film with the fishing photography, learned how to shoot on negative, which was a lot easier. And then when digital came, it was all JPEG in the beginning. And that's how I stayed.
It's interesting this, because I've had a guest on the show in the past, and I think it's also a wedding photographer. I just can't remember who it was now. But I had a similar conversation about shooting JPEGs for weddings. I found it quite interesting then. Does that make your life easier in terms of post-production, or why do you prefer JPEG or RAW?
Heaps easier. So, first of all, that I can shoot a lot more if I want to. Easily on the cards. Post-production is quick. The computers handle the JPEGs super fast, PhotoMechanic and also Photoshop. I don't use Lightroom. I'm only Photoshop and PhotoMechanic. I have actions that I've created over the years to process those JPEG files, which get them very, very close to where I need them to be. And I'm so used to shooting JPEG and exposing for JPEG in any scenario. But that's just what I'm comfortable doing. I mean, I tried shooting RAW, and I thought, what am I doing? I'm trying to make these RAW files look like my JPEGs. This is ridiculous. And just doing all this extra work. And look, yes, I 100% understand the advantages of shooting RAW. I know there's a lot more latitude with the dynamic range and everything else. But I get what I want from my JPEGs.
And so if you expose them correctly, anyway, then you don't really need to recover that much. I mean, that's what I found.
You don't? There's no recovery if you get your exposure right. There's no recovery.
Yeah, exactly. Because I like a little bit of street photography once and again. So that's what I do. I just shoot JPEGs for that. There's no...
Right. You know, wow.
Just so mainly because...
That's pretty rare, though. That's rare.
What I do is for street photography, I use a little Fuji X100 F that I've got that I love. And it comes with a number of sort of color profiles. Yeah, like presets. But you can create your own presets. And there's a really great app out there that gives you lots of little recipes that you can use as starting points to create your own presets. And I love experimenting around with that. And then the thing is, like, my thinking is, well, once I've developed that little preset, you know, that little color profile, and it might be like a film simulation or whatever. And I then go out and I photograph it. I thought, then what's the point in changing it afterwards? Because that's the whole point was, you know. And like, no matter whether it might be black and white profile, it might be like, you know, I might think like, okay, well, today I'm going to go into London and I'm just going to do like a really high contrast black and white type of thing. That's what I want to do. Well, I'm not really going to come back and then convert them into color. Well, you know, if I were to shoot RAW, then I would then have to again go and convert them back into black and white after, but it doesn't make any sense. You know, plus I like street photography as a fun pastime. I'm not aiming at selling prints. I've got some prints printed around me, you know, that I love. But I'm not, like, there's no other thought behind it. I'm just purely doing it to have some fun with photography. You know, when your day job is photography, when you're shooting events and you're shooting headshots and this and the other, then I find that I need to have a little creative outlet where I just make things for fun, you know. And actually, and I think it's so important, you know, to just to keep your creative juices flowing and to actually to carry on having fun with photography, you know, because that's ultimately why I got into it in the first place. And, you know, I take my daughter with me sometimes. You know, we've been on little photo walks before. Sometimes when I have friends come over, like from the States, for example, and they're visiting London, you know, mostly their photographer friends, you know, we do a little city walk and we'll do, you know, do some street photography together. Nice. That's always, it's a great social thing. You know, you can do it as a social thing. You can do it just if I just have so much stress on my head that I just need to take some time out. And I just think, okay, well, I'm just going to spend an afternoon or morning or something going into town and just take some photos, you know.
I like it. Yeah, it's almost, it's liberating, not having to come back and do all that processing, just shooting for fun.
Absolutely, yeah. And also, I'm not precious about these photos at all. You know, if I come back, oftentimes I come back and I look at the photos and I go, there's really nothing in there, you know, nothing in there that's worth doing anything with. And then, you know, I'm very good at pressing the delete button. You know, I think that's my superpower. I'm excellent when it comes to deleting crap that I don't.
That is a good superpower. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's always, I've always been very good with that. Like, I have no scruples when it comes to that. Like, I'm not keeping all of my RAW files for all eternity. Screw that. You know?
Yeah. Well, my wife, Linda, she was the culling expert when it comes to weddings. So any wedding would go to her, and she was ruthless. There's two that look similar, bang, one's gone. It was like, not even a thought. I'm like, oh, I really like that one. She's like, nah, it's gone. You're not the client.
Yeah, well, exactly. And, you know, I do this, this is one of the things that I do in my headshot sessions, and it's a really super important part of it. So rather than, you know, shooting and then putting an online gallery together and then letting the client choose their favorite shot, what I do is the image selection process is part of the session. That happens at the end of the session. It's super important because that's really when the sales opportunity is, you know, and it's because it's like a guided process. I literally get them to basically bring it down to the hero shot for each look. And I can guarantee you that they will at least buy one shot for each look. So if I, you know, if I have the time, or if the client has the time and they, you know, I can shoot five different looks in an hour or something, then I guarantee you they'll buy at least one of each of those. So I'm already guaranteed to upsell four photos. Whilst, you know, if you put a gallery out, there's always a chance that they're just going to go, oh, well, we're just going to go for this one. There's no guidance to that process. So you're leaving it up to the universe. And I'm not very good at leaving things up to the universe. So that's one thing. But the other thing also is it then, you know, it means that the process is ongoing, and I don't really like that. I like to have clarity at the end of the session. How many photos are they buying? How many photos am I going to retouch? I'm going to retouch them the same afternoon or the day after, then they're out the door. I need to have the product out the door ASAP. I can't have things hanging around waiting for because you know what it's like. You send somebody a link to an online gallery, oh God, it takes like a week for them to get back because, you know, they have to get the husband and the whoever else has to be in the room, and then there's never a good opportunity, and it takes absolutely days until you're back from the room. I'm like, you know, there was a point where I thought, like, I'm not doing that. I'm over that.
that's where the listener or the viewer has to test out the 1-5 and all strategy and the 48-hour 20% discount, and I guarantee that works well. Maybe not for headshots, but certainly for pets and families and stuff. 100% the engagement.
100%. And the thing is, like, it's not that I'm not using online galleries. I am using online galleries, just for clarification.
But your way is better. If you can do it your way, that's the best way, for sure. If you can do in-person sales and have the client, that is the best way, for sure.
Yes. I mean, I am using online galleries, but not usually for headshots, more like for events and things like that. I do a thing where it was called mini headshot sessions. I do that once a year, sometimes twice a year. It's a very limited thing where I'm just cramming a lot of mini sessions into usually 2 days. And what that does for me, it brings me immediate income, a very quick kind of turnover. It also allows me to access those clients who wouldn't necessarily, for budgetary reasons or whatever, buy my standard offering, as it were. And so therefore it creates long-term leads, because more often than not, those clients will be repeat customers. They will come back for other things later on. So it allows me to create leads. And so since I'm getting paid for generating leads. But it's a very rare thing. I do, like I said, once a year. It's an occasion thing. It's not something that people can bank on that it's going to happen all the time.
Right.
And, you know, and for that, because of the time constraints, because it's literally 20-minute blocks, I will then sometimes use online galleries for that if there's no time for the selection process, you know.
Makes sense.
Because he's so constrained. So I still use online galleries, PixieSet in particular, but not for every session, because if I can get the whole thing done and dusted and send it off, you know. And again, it's all about managing expectations. They've picked, or we've picked the final shots together. They already know what they're getting. And then actually, of course, for them, the wow factor is when they see the fully retouched version, which is going to be so much better than what they've already seen. So it's actually, I'm surpassing their expectations at that point, and just makes for happier clients all around.
Nice. Perfect.
But yes, that's the thing. Andrew, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. It's amazing. Again, you know, because in a sense, we share a lot of experiences when it comes to podcasting and stuff like that. It's always fantastic speaking to other podcasters. And I know, you probably share this experience. I've met so many fellow podcasters since I've started doing this. It's really amazing to link up, especially when it's, you know, with people who run the podcast that I myself have been listening to for a very long time. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Mate, it's an absolute pleasure. Thanks, Kirsten. It's been fun talking to you. And, I'm glad we finally had a chance to sit down and do it. So, mate, massive thanks for having you.
Yes. Okay, folks, that's it for today. I'm so pleased to have Andrew on the show. Despite the time difference, it's been awesome to finally make it happen. And as always, before we go, let me just recommend another episode that I think you'll love. Check out episode 187 with Russell Preston Brown, where we discuss the future of photography. I'm sure you'll love it. If you enjoy our content, consider supporting us on buymeacoffee.com/camerashake to help us continue creating and bringing you more exciting episodes. It really does mean the world to us. And for those of you who are listening to the audio version of this podcast, did you know that there's a fully fleshed video version over on YouTube with plenty of examples of our guest photography in full Technicolor? Well, you should by now, because I keep mentioning it all the time. All you have to do is go over to YouTube, search for Camera Shake Podcast, and you'll be able to watch all past episodes on there. And of course, if you're already on YouTube, then drop us a comment, hit the like button, ring that bell, and share with your friends. Your engagement helps us reach a wider audience all over the planet. Thank you for listening and watching. And remember, new episode drops every Thursday, so make sure you mark that in your calendar. Until next time, keep shaking things up in the world of photography. See you next Thursday.